Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. What was the main theme of yesterday's discussion?
First, there is no sense unless it is helpful from the world.
Yes, but more clearly.
Bhakti is independent of karma, jnana, and yoga. But you are not clear about karma, jnana, and dependent on bhakti.
Yes, correct. What was the theme of the Bhagavatam class today?
It was more or less the same.
Yes, it was exactly the same, more or less. So, yesterday, we read two very striking verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, quoted by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatan Goswami. And there were some questions about the verses at the end of the class. And I thought I should make one or two points about each verse. One verse appears as text 28 in chapter 22. Ya esham purusham sakshat atma pravavam ishvaram navajantya vajananti Stanat Brasta Patantyada. If one simply maintains an official position in the four varnas and ashramas, but does not worship the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he falls down from his puffed up position into a hellish condition. So the question was raised, how someone who is engaged in varnashram, which is supposed to be pious activity, can fall down into hell. So to answer more clearly, we will see the verse more closely. Na bhajanti means does not worship, and avajananti means neglect. So here we find two types of persons who do not worship. One person does not know that Vishnu is the Supreme and therefore does not worship. The other person knows that Vishnu is the Supreme, but still he does not worship. Ye esham purusham sakshat atma prabhavam ishvaram. Atma prabhavam means that he is the source of everyone, for he is the father of everyone. If someone does not know who his father is, there is something wrong. Srila Prabhupada says, if someone does not know who his father is, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. He's mad. He is mad. So we should know who our father is. And if someone does not know who his father is, there's something wrong. Na bhajanti. And avajananti. If someone knows who his father is, or who his master is, but if he does not serve him or respect him, there also is something wrong. He's actually committing offenses. He's actually showing disrespect. Just like when Bhrigu Muni met Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the father of Bhrigu Muni. So Bhrigu Muni should have offered obeisances to him. But he did not offer obeisances to him. And therefore he was guilty of committing an offense. Although he did not take any action against Brahma or speak any words against Brahma. But because he failed to offer respect when he should have, he was guilty of disrespect or offense. So both types of persons who do not worship the Lord are either offensive or negligent. Ignorant. They're ignorant. One is ignorant that about the Purusha, and the other is neglectful of the Purusha.
Can we compare that to the difference between the Impersonalists and the Mahayana?
There's some similarity. In fact, one category of ignorant person or neglectful person is the one who thinks that that the Purusha is one of the living entities under the material modes of nature. In other words, just like the demigods are living entities within the universe, they're not spiritual. So they may think that the Purusha is also like them. Not knowing that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the master of the modes of nature.
These people following Varnashram, this is the example of Karmis, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not really referring to demigod worshippers, or is it assuming that they would be demigod worshippers?
Well, let me continue, because in Varnashram Dharma there are so many duties for householders. So they offer they offer sacrifices and other things. But here the point is that how can someone who is following Varnashram fall down and go to hell? So, because they don't know about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or even if they know, they don't worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are guilty of gross ignorance or else gross neglect. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur especially has commented on this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that if one does not have a bona fide spiritual master, even if he's trying to be a religious person who's following Varnashram Dharma, but eventually because he doesn't have a bona fide spiritual master, he will become subject to speculative ideas about the absolute truth. And he will ultimately deviate. So the first step of the fall down is stanad brashta. He falls from his position in varnashram. Now Srila Prabhupada has said that the beginning of human life is varnashram. Or in other places, that the beginning of human life is when one inquires into the absolute truth. So if one does not inquire into the absolute truth, if he does not know who is the source of everything, and then if he falls from his position in varnashram, he will become unregulated. Unregulated means he will become sinful. He'll become like an animal, and he'll become sinful. And then, due to sinful activities, he will fall down into hell.
This example of some knowledge, basically now in India, the caste system, all this is completely devoid of knowledge of the supreme, of the enjoyer, the ultimate enjoyer. So you see, maybe there's certain residues, and it was practiced for a long time, the caste system, but it was dead, actually. It was degrading.
Yes. But even if we look at our own devotees, we see that many of our own devotees leave the association of other devotees with the idea that they will be good grihasthas. But when they leave the association of devotees, they gradually neglect the worship of the Lord, and then they fall down to hell, we've seen practically. So this is the meaning. This is the meaning, that without the association of devotees and without the worship of the Lord, they will, although they have the intention of following varnashram, but without the touch of devotional service, they won't maintain the position in varnashram. Then they will deviate, become implicated in sinful activities, and go to hell.
Maharaj, what was the
terminology
used? Stana?
Stana, that means one's position, and brashta. Like yoga, yoga brashta, fallen yogi.
The demigod worship side, I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up.
Actually, that wasn't our point here. Somebody brought it up. I think you're getting at the point that there's karmakanda, gyanakanda, and upasanakanda, and whether demigod worship is an upasanakanda and not karmakanda, or... No.
It was just the idea of karma and karma kanda, and this whole, and falling down to hell. I don't mind.
I think we should go ahead, because there, and then after we finish the next verse, which is complementary to this, we'll take questions and then we'll go to today's verses. But just to conclude about the present verse, I'll read one relevant quote from Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So relevant. Chapter 6, text 47. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shradavan bhajate yo mam same yukta tamo mataha. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Purport. The word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can avoid worshiping a respectable man or a demigod, and may be called discourteous But one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down.
There's another purport where she replies, I don't remember exactly which verse it is, where Prabhupada makes the statement that if one does not make the aim of his activities for the Nirvana Ashram to satisfy Krishna, then he will be unable to follow the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma. So when I read the verse, my mind picked up on the word official, the way Prabhupada translated the verse, official position. Mm-hmm. So externally he may be in some official position, but he's not actually in the Varnashram unless
if he neglects Vishnu.
If he's not making the goal of, because that's the definition given in the Bhagavatam. The goal of the Varnashram is to please Vishnu. So if he's doing it in order to become independent from authority, or in order to become popularly situated, or whatever reason, self-motivated reason, then he's not actually in the Varnashram. So therefore he'll go to hell, because he'll be forced to sin.
Correct. Now text 30 is very similar. Text 28 says that if one follows Varnashram but does not worship the Lord, he falls down. And text 30 says that if one imagines that he's liberated but does not worship the Lord, then he falls down. And in both cases, the persons are proud. The karmi who does Varnashram and does not worship Lord Vishnu is proud. He's not humble, but he's proud. And the jnani who tries to become liberated by impersonal speculation or yoga but does not serve the Lord is also proud. Now yesterday, two understandings of the verse were presented. One understanding was that they imagine that they're liberated, but they're not actually liberated in Brahmajyoti. They just imagine that they're liberated and they fall down. And the other understanding was that they may even enter the Brahmajyoti. But even having entered the Brahmajyoti, they will fall down because they've neglected the lotus feet of Krishna. And both understandings are possible. Both understandings are possible because in the translation in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada uses the words, although they accept severe austerities and penances and rise to the spiritual position, to impersonal Brahman realization, they fall down again because they neglect to worship your lotus feet. So it could be said, and in the Sanskrit also it says, Aruya Krichena Parampadam, having ascended by severe austerities and penances to the supreme position. And here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the same verse is translated by Srila Prabhupada. Someone may say that aside from the devotees who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, there are those who are not devotees, but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? In answer to this question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods said, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. And in the word-for-word translation, parampadam is translated the highest position, and then in parentheses, according to their imagination and speculation, and parentheses. So the words may be taken as referring to the actual fact that they've achieved parampadam, or it may be referring to the fact that they think that they've achieved parampadam, but they actually have not. But there is no harm in either understanding. And this is the point that I wanted to make, that the verses in the Bhagavatam are so rich that they may have many correct meanings or many different understandings, just as Lord Chaitanya gave so many different meanings for the Atmarama Shloka. So we should be aware that the same verse can be understood differently and explained differently, even by the same person, by Srila Prabhupada, in different contexts. And we should not be disturbed, but we should understand that it's the richness of the Bhagavatam that allows the verses to be explained in different ways. And here the two explanations do not affect the main point, that bhakti is independent of other processes for success. In fact, bhakti becomes weakened by being mixed with other processes, whereas other processes are dependent on bhakti for success. Because here the goal of the jnanis is mukti. And if we say that impersonal jnana or impersonal yoga, they don't actually reach Brahmajyoti unless there's some bhakti, there's no contradiction. It supports the basic thesis. And even if we say that they may reach Brahmajyoti but they can't stay there, that also does not contradict the main thesis. Because, as Srila Prabhupada said, real mukti is eternal. So even if they enter Brahman and come down, where is the mukti? Because it's only temporary, it's not permanent. So certainly, if someone wants mukti, he wants permanent mukti, not temporary mukti. So unless he has some touch of devotional service, he cannot get permanent mukti. And therefore, he's also defeated in his attempts without bhakti. And here the same words, patanti adha. Here patanti adha means that he imagined he was liberated and he fell down, or he was liberated in Brahman and he fell down. And in the other verse, patanti adha means that he was in the material world trying to execute varnashram dharma, but he fell down into sinful activities and went to hell. So, not only can they not achieve success without bhakti, but without bhakti they can't even maintain themselves in whatever position they're in, but they will fall down. So that's the conclusion.
How does a jnani have a touch of bhakti in order to achieve success? And what's the actual practical application?
I mentioned yesterday. Were you here?
Yeah, I think I missed it. I asked another devotee after class what that point
I mentioned yesterday, and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu gives the example that some person will get the association of pure devotees with the idea of merging into Brahman. And in the association of pure devotees, he will chant Hare Krishna, and he will hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and other things. But he will see them as a process for realizing Brahman. And in the association of pure devotees, he will experience the reflection of spiritual ecstasy. And the reflection of spiritual ecstasy Arati Abbas, is so powerful that it can give liberation. Like Namabhas. Namabhas is so powerful that it can give liberation. So if a jnani chants in Namabhas or experiences Rati Abbas, he can be liberated, although he maintains the desire for liberation. But there is some danger here. There's some danger that if he commits offenses, then he will not be liberated. There's a difference between Namabhas and Namaparad. Just like there's a difference between a Brahma body and a Maya body. So if someone is not offensive to Krishna, but he just thinks that by Krishna's name he can get liberation, or by association with Krishna's devotees he can get liberation, he can. Much more easily than by doing all the severe penances and austerities that the impersonalists do. Well, this shows how powerful bhakti is.
The question is, why would anyone go to the Brahman after associating with pure devotees?
Well, if by associating with pure devotees they become pure devotees, then they won't go to Brahman, they'll go to Krishna. But not everyone who associates with pure devotees becomes a pure devotee. Some become offenders. I mean, it's not automatic. But if they associate in the right way, then certainly they'll get Krishna.
To my understanding, generally it seems that by associating with impersonalists, just like I was thinking about this verse in the fifth canon, one can attain the passive liberation from material bondage only by rendering service to highly advanced spiritual personalities. These personalities are impersonalists and devotees. Whether one wants to merge into the Lord's existence or wants to associate with the personality of Godhead, one should render service to the Mahārāja. So in this verse, it also indicates that the impersonalist, by associating with the Mahārāja, that
correct.
Can you please give the reference to the verse which states that impersonal liberation is only natural?
It's right in the text that we're reading, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. No. This verse, Yanye Rivindaksha Vimukti Manina, which is quoted as Madhya Leela chapter 22, text 30, is originally found in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. So what I read was from 10.2.32.
There were two verses quoted.
No, it's the same verse, but with two different translations. Okay, now we come to today's verses, which are very important for all of us, because they explain how people who engage in devotional service become free from all Maya. And we are in Maya, at least I am. On one walk with Srila Prabhupada, he was encouraging me and praising me. And then at the end of the conversation, I said, you know, that sometime, something like sometime, the same thing turns into Maya. And Prabhupada stopped, put his cane down and says, turns into Maya? You are always in Maya. So, this at least for me, this section is important. Someone who's always in mind. His qualities are not different from him. His pastimes are not different from him. So when we hear the pastimes of Krishna, Krishna is present, and in the presence of Krishna, Maya cannot stand. So if we always allow the pastimes of Krishna to enter our hearts through our ears, then all the dirty material things will go away. In the 10th canto, we find the same statement. At the end of the description of the rasa dance, Sukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Parikshit in conclusion that one who hears about the playful activities of Krishna and the young gopis of Vrindavan, shadanvito. Shadanvito means with eagerness. Eagerness is very important. With thirsty ears. Ears thirsty to drink the nectar. One who hears the pastimes with such eagerness or describes them, he very quickly becomes sober. And he becomes cured of the disease of the heart called lust. So here also the same fact is stated. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also comments that someone may say that first I should free the heart from lust, then bhakti will come. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says no. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, you hear the pastimes of Krishna and bhakti will come. And when bhakti comes, then all of the lust will be vanquished. So in other processes, knowledge and detachment are required. But here, even if one is lusty, angry, greedy, and everything that some of us, like me, are, still we can practice bhakti. And by the mercy of bhakti, we will become free. So we should continue in all circumstances. That's the main point. And as long as we continue, then by the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas and bhakti will be free. Now here's another important point, which is very good for us, because we sometimes change our mind. We decide to surrender, but then we change our mind and decide that we shouldn't surrender so much. Maybe to some extent, but not so much. Then what will happen to us? So here the Lord Himself tells us. Sakrit eva prapanoyas tavasmiti chayachate abhayam sarvada tasmai vidami etad vitammama. It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. So if only once we sincerely surrender to the Lord, and we say, my dear Lord, I am yours, you can do with me whatever you like, I am your property. And then later on, we start to think, did I do the right thing? But still, because we surrendered once, the Lord will, He'll take care of us. He'll keep track of us and He'll take care of us. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami subhudi yadi haya gada bhakti yoga tabi krishnera bhajaya. Due to bad association, the living entity desires material happiness, liberation, or merging into the impersonal aspect of the Lord, or he engages in mystic yoga for material power. If such a person actually becomes intelligent, he takes to Krishna consciousness by engaging himself in intense devotional service to Lord Sri Krishna. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaridhi tigrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham varam. Whether one desires everything or nothing, or whether he desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by rendering transcendental loving service. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Now, why is he intelligent? He is intelligent because if he wants to merge into the impersonal Brahman, what is the impersonal Brahman? The impersonal Brahman is the transcendental effulgence of Krishna's body. So unless Krishna agrees to accept him into his effulgence, he cannot enter. Previously in Srimad Bhagavatam, there was description of various demigods. Now if someone wants to worship some demigod for some benefit, he can do so. But ultimately, who has to give the sanction? Ultimately, Krishna has to give the sanction. So if he's intelligent, he can go to Krishna directly. So whether one wants impersonal liberation or material enjoyment, ultimately he depends on Krishna. So if he's intelligent, he'll worship Krishna directly by the process of bhakti yoga, because bhakti yoga is most efficient, even if someone wants bhukti or mukti. And here the word Tivrena, firm, or as mentioned in the previous verse, intense. One has to be serious in any practice, either in material life or spiritual life, if one wants success. So we have to be serious about bhakti yoga. Like Dhruva Maharaj was so serious, although he had some motive, but he was so serious, and therefore he was able to get the results. So we should be serious. Serious means we should follow the order of the spiritual master, like Dhruva Maharaj followed the order of the spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada has given instructions not so difficult as Narada Muni gave to Dhruva Maharaj. He has given very easy instructions. Chant 16 rounds, follow four principles, and preach. And if we just follow such simple instructions, we will get everything. Even if we have some other desires. But we should not have. We will come to that. But even if we do have, no harm. Krishna will help us. And how will he help us? We will come to that. We don't want to frighten you too much in the first week. So, Akama. Who is Akama? Pure devotees. Srila Prabhupada says that the best example are the gopis of Vrindavan, because the gopis of Vrindavan had no desire, no thought, no consideration besides Krishna's pleasure. When Krishna would go into the forest during the day with the cows, the gopis would be at home crying. And why were they crying? Because they were thinking that the lotus feet of Krishna are so soft, they may be pricked by some pebble or thorn on the way. And thinking of the pain that Krishna might experience, they cried. Sarvakama, those are the karmis. They have so many material desires, which we've discussed. And moksha kama are the gyanis who want liberation. If they try independently with karma and jnana, but no bhakti, they cannot achieve success. But if they leave karma and jnana and take to bhakti, they can get success. Even in the fulfillment of their desires. But in addition, they get something more than the fulfillment of their desires, which we will now read. If those who desire material enjoyment or merging into the existence of the Absolute Truth engage in the Lord's transcendental loving service, they will immediately take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, although they did not ask for it. Krishna is therefore very merciful. Srila Prabhupada tells the story how we should be eager to see Krishna. And he told the story of one man who heard in some discussion about Krishna's pastimes that Krishna is a very small child and his mother dresses him and decorates him with beautiful golden ornaments and jewels. And he goes in the morning with the cowherd boys and the calves into the forest of Vrindavan and takes care of the calves and plays with the boys. So he thought, if I go to Vrindavan, I can see Krishna. And when he's outside the house, all decorated with golden ornaments and jewels, I will steal the ornaments and jewels. So he went to Vrindavan, and after some time he saw Krishna just as he heard him described. And he approached Krishna and he told Krishna that, you are such a nice little boy. You are so sweet and so beautiful. And you have so many jewels, and I have heard even at home you have so many jewels. So you please give me your jewels, what you have, and when you go home your mother will give you more. And I will give you some lunch. So Krishna said, this is a very good proposal that you have given. But I am very dependent on my mother. So I will go home and ask my mother. And if she says I can give you, then surely I will give you. Now in the course of the discussion, the thief became enchanted by the beauty of Krishna. And he eventually forgot about the gold and jewels and the things he wanted to steal, and he also became Krishna's devotee. So this is the mercy of Krishna, that even if we come to Krishna for some other purpose, that by the mercy of Krishna, we'll become attracted by the beauty of Krishna and forget all other inferior things. Krishna kahe, Krishna says, ama bhaje. If he worships me, mage vishaya sukha, but requests material happiness, amrita chadi, giving up the nectar, visha mage, he begs for poison, e bada murka, he is a great fool. If someone comes to Krishna who can give nectar, but instead of asking for nectar, he asks for poison. What is he? A bada murka. He is a great fool. Ami vijnana. I am very intelligent. A murki vishaya kene diba. Why should I give material intelligence to this, material enjoyment to this foolish person? Sva charanamrita diya. I will give him the nectar of shelter at my lotus feet. Vishaya Mulaiba, and I shall make him forget the idea of material enjoyment. Krishna is so merciful and so intelligent. He's more intelligent than we are. Then Lord Chaitanya gives the example of Dhruva Maharaj. The Dhruva Maharaj approached the Lord for some material benediction. But in the end, by the mercy of the Lord, when he saw the Lord, he gave up the desires for material benediction. And he only wanted the service of the Lord. So the Lord offered him so many types of benedictions. But finally Dhruva said, Swami kritarthosmi varam nayache. O Lord, I'm fully satisfied. I do not ask any benediction. So this is the beauty of devotional service, that even if one adopts the process with some motive, but in the end, because he came to Krishna, Krishna is so kind and so cunning, he will give you the nectar of shelter at his lotus feet. And when you taste the nectar, then you will forget all other desires. One more verse, and then we can... No, that's all. Yes.
Verses 38 and 39, one doubt could come to the devotees, you know, this kind of saying, well, yeah, that's nice, but so many devotees, they succumb to the illusory material pursuits. How would you respond to that?
Any answers?
Because actually they don't want Krishna's mercy. Because one actually has to desire that this may happen to one so that Krishna can also... It's not that Krishna can just take us out against our will, so we also have to want Krishna's mercy. But if we are not willing to take Krishna's mercy, then how can this happen?
Can't hear.
Says Krishna is willing to give his mercy, but if someone doesn't want to take his mercy, what can Krishna do?
It's also that one verse, what is it? Chattvasa dharmam charanam bhujam hare.
Yes.
I guess that pretty much answers
that
question.
Basically, there are two reasons why someone leaves. One is that he comes to devotional service with material desires. And he doesn't take to the process with enough seriousness to destroy the material desires. The fifth canto gives the example of some land which is plowed, but still some seeds are there in the land. And when the time comes, the seeds will sprout. So we have seeds of material desires when we come. And if we don't take to the process enough seriousness, then the seeds can sprout. And the other reason is, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, there are four causes of anartha. Another cause is aparad. See, one cause is the results of past pious activities. Another cause is the result of past sinful activities. So the seeds within the heart could be the results of either past pious activities or past sinful activities, because any material desire is sinful. Then the next category of anartha is caused by aparad. So even if someone is not so much influenced by material desires in the beginning, but later material desires may become prominent if he commits offenses. Because the result of committing offenses is that one becomes overwhelmed by material desires. And that's why even people who were able to follow the regulative principles for years, 10 years, 20 years, but if they become implicated in offenses, then material desires can become powerful and overwhelm them. And the fourth cause of anartha is performing devotional service improperly. Here, he refers to weeds. Weeds can sprout. Weeds that were not there before he began the process of devotional service can sprout after he begins the process of devotional service, if he's not careful. Because the weeds very much resemble the devotional creeper. And if he's not careful to distinguish between the weeds and the devotional creeper, he may be watering the weeds, thinking that he's watering the creeper. And the weeds will take all of the good water that is meant for the creeper, and they'll become strong. And they can choke the creeper.
As far as I remember, it's in the Krishna book about the autumn season, and Prabhupada explained that in the beginning, also in relation to what he said, in the beginning one may take up sadhana bhakti with great determination, and this way one may make rapid advancement, but then later if one becomes a little lax in one's determination, then again Prabhupada said the hibi seeds, they'll sprout out of yoga.
So we have to maintain our efforts. We have to maintain our efforts. And we shouldn't give up. Will be successful. Okay.
So this text 39, Krishna is almost conceding that some error has been made along the lines of those four kinds of errors that you're outlining, whether it be Atmanarayana, whether it be whatever. Because Krishna is already referring to such a person as a fool for deviating in some way or another,
yes.
Still he is promising that he will make such a person forget their illusory pursuits. So could we not understand that in due course of time that will happen? In other words,
yes, not immediately.
It's just early days.
Not immediately. We have to be patient and confident of success because we're making our best effort and Krishna's merciful, Krishna's who will help us, and in the end we will be successful. Okay, so we read the next verses. No written homework, but I think for the weekend I'll ask you just to summarize or outline the main points of the different sections that we've read. And then you can hand them in next week.